You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode was made possible by the support of our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm Oren, with me today is...
Wes.
And joining us once again is special host Reese.
Hey, everybody.
Hey again, Reese.
Reese, I think I might have read my notes wrong, because it says here we're talking about storytelling in video games, and I'm pretty sure video games are just for, like, shooting monsters and earning points. I don't understand. How can you have a story in a video game?
Well, see, you left off a very important part of video games, which is purchasing loot crates.
Oh, very important loot crates. The exciting narrative of the loot crate.
Exactly. Every crate is a story about how EA wants your money. But yeah, I really wanted to talk about storytelling in video games, not just because it's topical, but because I have a lot of video games that I really love because of their stories. I know.
Video games that you like to play, huh? What an odd notion.
Scandalous. Not just a video game that I get punished by and have to keep coming back to because I need them points.
Yeah, very, very unusual relationship you have with your games there, Reese, I have to say.
I know.
Weirded me out a little bit.
Little bit. Tiny bit.
All right, so how is storytelling in video games, like, different from storytelling in, like, I don't know, a bunch of letters put together on a piece of paper?
Well, I mean, the first part of that, obviously, is the player. So, you know, you got a bunch of letters on a book, you just have a reader. The reader's gonna read it, it's gonna be good. Video game, you have this player who wants to interact with the world. So your focus, you know, is on the story, but you also have to develop the world around it. Otherwise, your player is going to get real bored real quick.
Yeah. Well, storytelling in video games shouldn't be any different than storytelling in other things. Like, yeah, do you want there to be good storytelling? Okay. Make sure there's a compelling plot, compelling characters, and a compelling world. Like, come on. Have those things in it, please. Like, that's all you need. And then from there, hash out the details.
All right. Okay. So, like, for sure, there are definitely, like, you know, best practices that apply to storytelling across almost any medium. I mean, that's, like, Mythcreants is basically founded on that principle, so I really hope it's true. but I do think that there are some specifics that apply to video games more than other mediums, and perhaps apply only to video games in certain situations. Like, I don't know if this is just me, but I've definitely noticed that I like it when, especially in a video game, when I meet a character at the same time, like when I meet an NPC at the same time that my character meets them.
Oh god, yeah. Yes.
Like, I prefer that. It feels weird to me to be playing this character and then be told, hey, it's your best friend, and then have your best friend be like, hey dude, I like, you know, skateboarding and weed. And it's like, I don't really know if I would be best friends with that person. It seems odd.
I don't know. They seem super chill. I'd be friends with them.
See, there you go, right? Because we are different people and we're playing the game differently. So, like, it creates, like, you feel more like the character, like, you are the character in the game, right? And the game can do different things to, like, increase or decrease that feeling. But in general, it's like, it's helpful if you meet the character at the same time your avatar does, so that way you can kind of define what your relationship to them is going to be. like, assuming you have that option, not all games have that functionality, right? Like, in some games, it's like you meet a new person and it's like, I have just clubbed 10 baby seals. And it's like, the game is like, you sound like a great person. And it's like, I don't really think I feel that way about this person, but okay, video game.
No, I think that's a good point, and I'm in favor of that. The only, I think, exception to that is if you're starting out, like, the game starts, right? So in those first few moments, you, like, it needs to take the proper precaution to, like, establish, like, whether or not you're going to have any conceits. Like, I was planning on talking about Baldur's Gate later. I'll talk about Baldur's Gate right now. You start it,
yeah. And
there's the little, like, scrolling bit about you are basically Gorion's ward and you grew up in Candlekeep. Therefore, everyone here is known to you. Cool. Outside of Candlekeep, no idea what's going on. Doesn't matter. You'll meet those people when you meet them. And so that's a good example of just, like, establishing, you know, like, pertinent backstory and NPC relationships immediately. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end, you get, like, Skyrim, where you just kind of, like, wake up and you're on a cart being dragged to an execution and your past doesn't matter. right? You've maybe have never been to Skyrim before. It doesn't matter. You're going to meet all these NPCs for the first time.
It's all okay, except for the fact that you're about to be executed.
Yeah.
Okay. So I also think we need to talk about, like, how much backstory video games need and when they should apply it. But before that, I do want to... Baldur's Gate is a very interesting example, because Baldur's Gate basically tells you what your relationship to Gorion is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's notable that, spoilers, Gorion dies pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But another character that can, at least in theory, stay with you for the entire game is Emoin.
Right.
Who you are also told that you know. But the game, notably, when you first talk to Emoin, gives you, like, a series of responses that sort of allow you to decide what your relationship to her is. Like, mm-hmm. Is she your best friend?
Mm-hmm.
Is she, like, your annoying sister? Do you, like, barely know her? You know, which one do you want it to be? And it's not a huge choice. Like, it doesn't have a huge amount of impact on the game. But it just, like, feels a little better, where it's just like, yeah, okay, you know, I get to sort of decide what my relationship with Emoin is. And that, like, helps me imagine going forward, like, you know, who this character is in my party and how I relate to them.
Right.
You know, not a huge deal, because, again, Baldur's Gate is more about, you know, killing gnolls and picking up short swords than it is about your relationship to the rest of your party, but still good.
Still, yeah. Right? Still very
still
good.
Still like it. Right. As opposed to, like, if I was going to use a negative example, Reese, I know you've also played Oxenfree, which,
yes,
I think for the most part is a really good game. Mm-hmm. I love Oxenfree. Has really good storytelling, but one of its weak points is your best friend, who is this guy who's just kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's mean, and he's sexist, and kind of a creep, and... It, like, I just don't love the fact that the game assumes I'm the sort of person who would be best friends with this guy. And it's, like, to the point where, like, one of the many, like, you know, because one of the big points of the game is, like, how your relationships with these characters change and, like, evolve over the game. And at the end, like, one of the results you can get with him is he can be like, I think something, like, just broke between us. It's our relationship's never going to be the same again. And it's supposed to be, like, a sad moment. But for me, it was like, you mean I just stopped tolerating your bullshit?
Mm.
Yeah.
I guess that's what happened. Because that's all I did, right?
Yeah, that I had a very similar experience when playing that. And that actually was the first result that I got, was him being like, oh, we're just not as good of friends anymore. And I was like, oh, that's because I wasn't in control before. You suck.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, if I'd been playing this character in, like, the month leading up to the start of the game, you never would have been here. same thing happens in Mass Effect. Like, in most of the Mass Effect characters, especially your party members, you meet them at basically the same time Shepard does. Mm-hmm. With the exception of Mass Effect 3 and, I don't even remember his name, Vega, I think? The Marine who joins your party, and it's like, hey, Shepard, we're best friends. And I'm like, who are you? This feels really weird.
Mm.
And he's like, Shepard, we have like a past and we're friends. Don't you like me? And I'm like, I don't really. And then like that like sort of just sets you off on the wrong foot with that character because it just feels awkward.
Yeah. Another series that does this very, very well is the Persona series.
Persona.
Yeah, Persona. 3, 4, and 5 start you off in a new town and you don't know anyone and you kind of maybe know the person you're staying with, but not really. Like for 4, it was your uncle and you'd never really talked to him before. He notes that he hasn't seen you since you were a baby. So like you're really establishing all of these relationships as you go. There's nothing to say like, here's your childhood best friend who's a complete and total jerk.
Yeah. And that's just like, it just really helps you get into character, right? Like whether that is a character who that the game has sort of decided on for you, or a character that you kind of decide who they are as the game progresses.
Mm-hmm.
So, Wes, you brought up Skyrim earlier and how it just kind of throws you in there and is like, who, what's your backstory? I don't know, whatever. That's actually a question I thought I'd put to both of you, is like, how important is character backstory in a video game? Like, you know, do you need it? Do you not need it? What is the context?
Well, for me, I mean, if you're gonna tell me exactly who I am and what's how this game's gonna go, like, I'm fine going along for the ride as long as it's interesting. But I mean, I think about like, well, why do I personally like to play video games? And I gravitate towards role-playing video games. And so the blanker the character, the better. It's my game. I want to play it how I want to play it. You know, like, you can tell me that I'm the Dovahkiin. Great. Like, awesome. I can absorb dragon souls and speak in their language. I accept that. But you tell me about my family. I don't need that. I will create my own family, please and thank you. And then instead of slaying dragons, I'm going to have to tell my kids, no, that mud crab cannot be your pet. It is filthy and will pinch the dog to death.
Every time you go back to your hometown, like, the two kids you adopted just keep pestering you for presents. And it's like, do real, Skyrim. Do real.
What about you, Reese?
Similarly, like, I am okay with having a backstory, but if that backstory includes characters who are following me along and I don't like, it's really going to impede my enjoyment of the game. Whereas if I have a blank slate character, well, I get to make the rules. Like, this character is going to be super cool with the, you know, I don't know, let's go Dragon Age. He's going to be super cool with the mages. You know, it's nice to have that ability to say, like, yeah, I want to go this way.
I think for me, it, like, it can have a, there's like, a good way of having a character that lets me decide who they are versus a character who sort of is no one. Like, and this sort of depends a lot on the context. Like, you know, people really like, you know, Half-Life 2, right? And it's storytelling, but I actually found it very frustrating because, you know, Gordon Freeman is, like, famously silent and doesn't even have, like, text dialogue. And, like, that was really frustrating for me because there was a point where, like, I woke up and it's like, oh no, suddenly Combines were here and knew why. And, like, I want to know, like, why are the Combines here? And the people I'm talking to know why the Combines are here, but I can't ask them, and they're not telling me, and it's like, it was very frustrating. Or like a less extreme example is in, say, the Fallout games, which I, you know, play all the time, especially the newer ones. Everyone in the Wasteland has a voice actor except you. Although, did you get a voice actor in Fallout 4?
Yes.
Did that happen? Yes. Okay. So I felt a little bit, didn't feel this as much in 4, but in 3 and New Vegas, everyone in the Wasteland is voice acted except you. And you're just like, if it makes me feel like a real, like a non-entity, right? It's like, you know, it's like, hey, someone came through here and fixed this radiation problem we had. Who was it? Eh. Nobody really knows. It was just some guy, you know, some courier. That was an extra problem in New Vegas, was that, like, the title that came up for you just sounded, like, ridiculous. It's like, in the first one, it was like you were the Vault Dweller, then you were the Chosen One, and then you were, like, I think the Wasteland Wanderer in Fallout 3. And in New Vegas, it's like, you're the courier, and there's just no way to make that sound badass. I'm sorry. It just isn't. So that was, you know, like, there's a... Ideally, I like a character who has personality, but I get to pick what that personality is. Mm-hmm. And like, I think Mass Effect will always be my favorite for that. Mm-hmm. Because I really felt like my Shepard was a very distinct person and like different from everyone else's Shepard because of the dialogue choices that I made with her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in a video game, there's the overarching plot, right? Like, I mean, there's mm-hmm. there's a start and an end point. So as I'm curious with you two, like, how much of the story when you play do you really want to, like, build and affect? And that's assuming that it basically all ends the same way.
A good question. Reese, do you want to go first?
I can take a swing at this. Assuming it all, with assuming that it all ends the same way, then it kind of feels like, you know, whatever I do in the middle doesn't super matter. Mm-hmm. Like, Fallout 4, let's take that. I forgot about my son, like, 3 hours in. I did not care about my son at all. I was like, no, I'm busy. I gotta help rebuild these settlements, and I gotta go meet this mayor that I've heard so much about. Like, who has time for a baby? And, you know, going away from that central plot was fine. Like, it was okay. Do I wish it had been more compelling? Yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. But there was enough, I guess, side story that made up for it. Like, mm-hmm. I had enough hooks in other places that kept me interested, that I was okay with, you know, messing around for 100 hours and not worrying about what was happening with potential child somewhere.
Right. Well, I mean, that's not uncommon for big open world RPGs and Bethesda games in particular, right? It's like, there's a main plot. It's like, yeah, I promise I'll get to it eventually. You know,
one day.
For me, at least, what it comes down to is, if I feel like if a game has me do something, I want it to matter. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, I'm fine with games that have basically no flexibility and are completely linear in the way the story turns out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, games like the Shadowrun games, at least the two expansions, Dragonfall and Hong Kong, the first one isn't really great, but those have very compelling stories, and those stories are incredibly linear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the entire, like, the all, like, I think of in those games, like, the side missions, quote unquote, like the ones that you have the options of not doing, are, like, pretty ancillary and aren't big deals. And, like, the most important thing that happens in them is you find out, like, some backstory on your companions. For the most part, those games are extremely linear, mm-hmm. and you go through a series of fights in, like, you know, neon cyberpunk locations. And then you get a story. Mm-hmm. And I was fine with it. I enjoyed both of them. I thought both of them had very compelling stories. Compare that to something like Fallout 4, which I also played the heck out of. But, you know, in Fallout 4, like, I spend hours and hours and hours building up the wasteland and building settlements and, you know, turning the Minutemen into, like, a fighting force.
Mm-hmm.
And installing, like, you know, cannons everywhere, and I've got my general's uniform, and they all call me the general. And then, like, the Brotherhood of Steel rolls in, and their leader is like, oh, hey, a random wastelander. And I'm like, excuse me, sir.
Sir, you must be new here.
Do you know like, who I am?
And it feels super wrong that the way that he reacts to me is no different than as if I hadn't done any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And again, you know, I still enjoyed the game. It wasn't a game killer for me, but it was annoying, right? It was like, it felt like I did all this stuff and then it kind of didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because then, like, the way that the story turned out basically wasn't affected by it. And interestingly enough, that's why I can't replay Fallout 4 like I have every other Fallout game, is because it feels wrong to not do all of the town building stuff, but also I know it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, I know that no amount of town building I do has any effect on the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, like, that I think is a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that video game stories have to keep in mind that a lot of prose authors wouldn't have to worry about so much is that the story at some level should match the mechanics.
Yes.
Like, have you guys ever played a game where it really felt like the story that was being told was just not a match for the actual gameplay you were doing?
Well, I guess I remember playing Fable 2, the second Fable. I didn't play 1 and I didn't play 3, but I remember the stakes of the game seemed pretty high, that the primary antagonist, like Lucien, is like rebuilding this spire that's going to have like the magic to like permanently alter the world or something like that. And I was like, okay, so I got to go be a hero and do this. But then I realized, like, I was stocking up on like food and like made sure I had potions and stuff. And then the first time I died in that game, I realized you don't die, you just get a scar. And I was just like, oh, so I eventually just win everything. Like, I mean, yeah, it can take like forever if like a troll just keeps like smashing you into the ground, but I remember thinking like, that's weird, I've never played a game where I just don't die. I guess that must have been intentional, there's no way that was an oversight. So that was definitely one of those moments where I felt like how they built it didn't quite match the game. It's like, you're going to be a hero and you're going to win. Congratulations.
Congrats. 10 out of 10.
That's like the problem of failure states, right? Because like nobody likes getting a failure state. And if your game has too many of those where it's like, oop, you died, like now you have to go and redo this, it's like that will get people to quit your game, right? Mm-hmm. I have quit a number of games because I just like failed too many times and I was like, nope, sorry, I'm not replaying that stuff again.
Yeah.
You know, that can be worse if you're in games that for some reason still have save points, right? And you're like, nope, sorry, that's an hour of gameplay you have to redo. So that's a problem. And I can see why some designers just fix it by being like, okay, there is no failure state.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of dying, you get a scar. Or in the case of like BioShock, instead of dying, you're just reborn at a life chamber and all of the damage you did is still there. Which, once you realize that after a while in BioShock, you're like, oh, okay, I guess I can just wrench everything to death.
Let me just wrench all of the things and not worry about stocking up on healing items or ammo or anything, really.
Right, it's like, you know, because I have infinite lives, the only thing that I'm wasting is my own time. And so, like, that's why there's so much... there's a really, really good extra credits video on hidden mechanics, because the optimal state of play for a game like this is for you to feel like you could have gotten a failure state, but that you didn't because you're a badass.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the ultimate, that's what you want. That's what a game wants. And so games, you know, have all of these tricks that they employ to make it like feel like you were about to lose. And then like, then you don't actually lose. And so there's like that really delicate balance, which is maybe a little bit off the topic of game storytelling, but I find it fascinating.
No, yeah, that's interesting.
I think it does loop into storytelling, though, where like that is the optimal state, but then you have the other end of it where narratively you fail, where no, you should have been able to do the thing. Like, you should have been able to save this person, but you couldn't because the narrative said you couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking of like games where the story, like, you know, gives you some kind of grief over things that you have to do because of the mechanics. Like, this was, you know, I like the Shadowrun games a lot, but one of the, there's one scene that really pissed me off in them where, like, you have to fight your way into this hotel to grab this hacker guy, right? Mm-hmm. That's the mission. It's a story mission. You can't not do it. And so I go in there and I do it and I finally get to him and he's like, man, how do you know I'm the bad guy? You just killed like 50 people to get to me. Maybe you're the bad guy. And it's like, game, I literally had no choice. There was no option where I could try to not kill people. That's just not part of the game. It feels really weird that you're berating me for doing that. You know, same thing with, or like in a game like Fallout where you have like 50 different companions, but you can only have one of them traveling with you at a time. Like, when I tell a companion, okay, we're done traveling together for a little while so I can try another companion, they guilt trip me.
They guilt you like no other.
They're like, oh, why would you want to leave me behind? Like, I'm so cool and my feelings are hurt now. And it's like, ah, no. It's like, guys, I know I've played like every playthrough with Cassidy because she's the first, you know, follower I get in New Vegas. And I can't bring myself to send her away. And I just feel like I'm missing a lot because of that, right?
On the other end, a game that I played a long time ago where I felt like some of the mechanics that really supported the storytelling well, and I think about this game all the time, and I don't know if either of you played Planescape Torment?
Very briefly.
Okay, so anyway, it's the same Infinity Engine that made like Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale.
Yeah.
But anyway... Mm-hmm. The game itself, you basically just wake up in a mortuary and then, you know, you go out and you discover and you're basically this nameless one that has all this many lives, but you're exploring the city of Sigil from like the D&D multiverse. But you start out fairly blank. And the thing that I noticed about this game, and prior to this, I had played Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale, is the first like person I talk to, there's a lot of dialogue options, like a lot. And I'm going to say right here, I loved every second of that game because each option affected your alignment and your perception. Every choice that you made in dialogue in that game mattered because it affected how your character eventually like evolved. And then as you kind of gradually like shaped into different alignments, you started to like lose options to represent like kind of like behavior that your character would probably do considering that circumstance. And I thought that was very cool. Just as far as like a mechanic, I love the idea of just like, why do I have to choose an alignment? I'll just like, you know, start the game and then see what happens. And that's exactly what they did. Which was just super fun. And I felt like when I was talking to people, I was contributing to the story because there was a mechanical element that definitely reinforced it. And this happened with everybody. This didn't happen with just only like main characters, side characters, minor people. I didn't feel like I had to do a quest to like improve my reputation. I could just, you know, be a jerk to somebody and that would like make me lead a little bit more, lean a little bit more like evil or selfish or things like that.
You know, I might have to give that game another try because like I tried it and I couldn't really get very far. But like that sounds cool. So I'd like to try it again.
Yeah, that sounds really neat.
It was fun. After that playthrough, I mean, just to everybody out there who's considering playing this game, don't play it unless you are like ready to read like a 500 page novel minimum. I mean, like, and it's the questions that they pose. The other great thing I liked about this game is that the storytelling mattered because I think in the entire game, excepting like random encounters, you only had to fight like 2 to 3 like bosses. And that doesn't even count the final boss. You don't have to fight him. You can talk your way out of it or make storytelling choices where you don't have to end the whole thing in a final bloody confrontation. And I was just like, yes, I'm placed into the narrative of the Nameless One, but I get to really shape my relationships with the party members, the world around me, and ultimately how the narrative ends. I thought that was just very cool.
Mm-hmm. That is actually there. That is something that I think storytellers in games should be a little wary of, though, is the amount that they ask their players to read.
Yeah, that's true.
Because at the very least, Torment does have this going for it, at least from what I saw, is that most of the stuff that it wants you to read is dialogue.
Yeah.
So I liked Pillars of Eternity. I liked it a lot. But one of the problems with the Pillars of Eternity story is that it throws you into a, like this really epic saga that's already, like, half finished. Like, when you're in the story, you're, like, dealing with the repercussions of something that already happened, and that some of your party members, like, know things about. But if you really want to get, like, the full story, you have to go and, like, find in-game books and read them.
Mm.
And it's just that was just too much work. I just couldn't be bothered to do that. And so I ended up beating the game with, like, only a vague idea what was going on. It's like, I got to the final boss and he was like, I'm gonna do this thing with the gods. And I'm like, that sounds bad. I guess I'll stop you. Right? And, you know, then, like, one very hard boss fight later, I was good. But I wish I had understood a little bit better what I was stopping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, that actually, we're pretty much out of time. Are there any, like, do either of you want to mention a game that you just, like, really liked the story of before we draw this to a close?
I got mine in.
I will just plug Abzu here.
Abzu,
which you play as this kind of blank slate diver who's exploring various underwater caverns and areas, and the story builds a lot through the environment and through your interactions with a little robot companion and this shark that appears now and again. It's a very cool narrative that isn't spoken at all.
Wow. All right, sounds cool.
Yeah, it does sound
everyone
cool.
Should check that out. All right. Well, for those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can leave a comment and we would perhaps answer it. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you like what we do, send a few dollars our way through our Patreon. Every cent goes into the hoard of gold we lounge on like dragons. Just go to patreon.com/mythcrants.
There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself by Jonathan Colton.